the quarantine special. It's been a while, Rude Middle Podcast. It's been a long time. A lot has happened since my last episode. I'm calling this one the quarantine special because, well, frankly, for all you future listeners of the podcast, the coronavirus, COVID-19, has taken over the world. An event that was unforeseen. Actually, that's a lie. China got wrecked by it. Then Italy. Then a bunch of other places. And now us. I have no idea how many confirmed cases are. It's upwards of like 4,000. Roughly 30 to 40,000 worldwide. Rob's eating popcorn.
I said I'd only do this if I could have popcorn.
That's true.
So, here we are.
I don't have any ads to read because I'm not sponsored.
No, wait. I thought you recently got sponsored by a drumstick company.
That was me individually, not the podcast.
Oh, okay.
But shout out to Innovative Percussion. That's happened since the last time I did a podcast. What else did I do? Oh, I finished grad school early.
Unfortunately, early.
It's very anticlimactic. I think the last time I talked on the podcast was the spring of my last year at McNeese.
Was Drake the last guest?
Summer after I graduated. Drake was not the last guest, I don't think. Hmm. It was a couple people in Lake Charles.
Drake was really antsy to get that one up. I remember him talking about it, wanting to get that up as quickly as possible.
Yeah. That was done on my phone.
And now look at you. Here you are with the full-blown mics, setup.
Yeah, yep.
Mics. And yeah, I mean,
I'm in my parents' house in Houston.
Back home for a little bit because everything got cut short and you might as well be quarantined here instead of by yourself.
I flew home. I flew home at 8:55 p.m. on Monday night. I bought my flight the same day at 4 o'clock p.m. It was extremely cheap. And
yeah, I picked them up at 1:45 in the morning because I'm a good person.
Rob's tried to pick me up before. And it's a certain time late at night. And he blew a tire. He was also going to be 45 minutes late anyway.
I was 45 minutes late for a reason. Not going to go into details on that. But so, but yeah, and then, you know, before I knew it, I had a blown tire. And I was... somehow I got lucky to where I just found an exit and I veered off and I had to wait in a parking lot until 5 a.m. to get my tire changed, which eventually the guy was like, hey, we can't even change your tire because I don't have the tools. You don't have the tools. So we're just going to tow you home. And so I got home at 6 a.m. and then took a nap and then reassessed the situation. All on the same weekend, I was supposed to be in we were supposed to be in a wedding and we were. But
a wedding? Oh, Brad's wedding.
Yeah.
Yep.
Brad got married since...
Since my last podcast.
Yeah.
Since my last podcast.
How many of our friends have been married?
Blake. Blake was the first one. Zach. Then Brad.
Micah?
Oh, Micah, too. Went to all those weddings. Adam got married.
Adam did get married, yeah.
We got Braden coming up.
Yeah, it's a... I mean, we're in that point of our lives now where it's just like... You know, you see, you turn left and right, and everybody's kind of getting married, and it's kind of weird.
When you get married, bro?
That is TBD.
Okay.
I don't know. We'll
see. Do you want to get married?
Yeah, eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I've said the age of like 30 is like a good time to get married, and hopefully by then, you know, you have financial stability and you're able to. You know, move forward in that part of life.
Sure. But
yeah, I think 30 is a pretty good age. But hey, teach their own. I mean, if you want to get married young, get married young. If you found the one, then good for you.
Yeah. I mean,
not a hater.
Not player haters here. But to be honest with you, the marriages that have been happening are the ones that you feel confident that they're supposed to be happening.
Yeah, that's a pretty good point.
My mom made us popcorn. 24, 25-year-old men right here.
I'm 24. I'm not 25
yet. I'm 24.
I turned 24.
So 24-year-old men here.
April 25th.
Doing a podcast during a quarantine. We're 3 feet away from each other. So
nothing wrong with some corn.
Not wrong with corn, no. I said corn.
Okay.
Sorry. Anyway. we're out here.
Yeah, you know, I never thought I'd...
H-Town.
I used to do a podcast, actually, a sports podcast at Sam Houston.
Yeah.
So the last time I've...
Back when podcasting was not nearly as popular. In fact, I started this podcast when podcasting wasn't even this popular. I started it in 2017.
What he's trying to say, is he's an innovator.
That's correct. I was brave enough to do one.
But yeah, I did a sports podcast for the school newspaper at Sam Houston.
Yep.
So 2014 was the last time I did a podcast. Usually all my conversations are offline.
Off the line.
I like to say that in meetings whenever I want to talk about something not in front of everybody. Hey, let's have this conversation offline. It's a pretty power move.
Hey. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. What else has happened since?
Let's talk offline.
What's happened? What else has happened since? Well, I went to Vegas. For sure, don't eat in the mic.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I'm sorry, people.
It's all right.
ASMR.
All 20 of you. Yeah, I went to Vegas. I think I said that on one of the last episodes.
That you were going?
Because yeah.
You definitely hadn't been yet.
No.
You visited. No? Did you visit?
At that point, I visited in February of 2018.
Okay, so yeah, you were...
Then I went out there again in June or July of 2018. Came out there in August. Went out there in August in 2018. And...
Now you're done. I mean...
Essentially, all our stuff got canceled.
Yeah. So...
That experience was really good for me. It was rough at first. It was that fear of missing out. Because, I was in Lake Charles for 5 years. And it became kind of like my home. Mm-hmm. Not everybody... So a lot of people that we went to school with went to Texas schools, primarily Texas A&M.
Giggum.
Oh, God, one of those. And then, they went to another school at U of H, or they stayed home. So they had their thing. And for Blake and I, Lake Charles was our thing.
Yeah.
That we could call our own, that we could go to, and we were like, all right, cool. Like, they're going to go to everybody else. Like, we're all home for the holidays. That's cool. We're seeing each other. Now I can go back to my thing. And then people can watch from afar.
Yeah, it's definitely good to have that second, like, family home type deal.
Yeah, I mean, it was good. Lake Charles was like Deer Park broken off from a major city. Mm-hmm. It was actually almost exactly the same. But it was Vegas... The school side of things, I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I'm either going to stay there or come back here. But in school sense of things, I needed that. It was my master's degree cut a little bit shorter than I thought it was going to be happening.
When would you have officially been done if all this hadn't been cut short?
Our last recording session was scheduled... It was like April 17th or something like that. No, that's not correct. It was like April 23rd. The week before that, we had a recording session. And then my master's recital was March 28th. To me, the master's recital was the main telltale sign that I was done. It was like my senior recital at McNeese. I'm looking at a poster of it right now. That was a huge marker in your time as a music student. It's kind of like a cultivation of like everything that you worked on, and then you display it and it's over and you're like, dang, all the thing, only thing I have left is one class and student teaching and then I'm done.
Yeah, definitely like the icing on the cake just to...
Yeah. One of the last episodes, in fact, was with my student teaching mentor, Mickey Smith. One thing that's happened with him since he... since I did a podcast last was he won the Grammy Music Educator Award. He was on the Grammys, was presented with the award, and it's the most prestigious music educator award in the country, maybe even the world. So he won that legitimately and deserves it. Fantastic educator. But my master's recital was supposed to be that marker of, you know, the first step of my grad work is done. Music students call their master's degree, especially if you're a performance, they call it the practice degree. So basically you just have all this time. You barely have any coursework. Most of your coursework is ensembles, so playing. And then your other coursework is like some legitimate classes.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Like sit down class professor kind of thing. And then otherwise you're playing your absolute you know what off. And so I was practicing upwards of 6 hours a day, which was significantly more than my McNeese time, just because I had the time. It was my job almost. My GA was very focused around percussion. I'm still technically a GA until all this mess is over. I still got a class to teach and stuff like that, a history of rock class, but primarily focused on half being a percussion GA, which is in charge of the logistics and some of the day-to-day stuff in the percussion studio under my professors, and then other half was I ended up teaching an online history of rock course. A lot's happened.
So what did this experience in Vegas, you know, outside of the schoolwork, outside of like the drumming and, you know, becoming, you know, master's, getting your master's degree, what did this teach you about yourself? You know, what did you ultimately end up learning, you know, outside of the schoolwork and all that?
That, so when I went out there, I wasn't quite believing in my craft. So if you understand what percussion is, it's essentially just all we do is control noise, is how one of my teachers puts it. Dean, my graduate professor, he put it as we control noise. So technically I could bring all those glass jars down from there and I could write a piece for them. Or I could improvise on them. And then I'm a percussionist. I'm allowed to do that. The difference between a person like me doing it and a person like you doing it is the intent behind it. So you're a videographer. You edit videos. You do some photography, stuff like that. Mostly videography. So your intent behind holding a camera is different than mine. Mine would be like, okay, hold it here and capture this. All I do is press the button, right? But you're worrying about white balance. You're worrying about all these different facets of videography. Whereas, you know, so that would be the difference between if I set those glass bottles down myself and I was playing them versus what you would do with them. You're just like, bing, bong, bing, right? And I'm looking like, okay, how many sounds can I get out of this glass mug?
That's for sure. That's definitely what I'm thinking. Yeah.
Because like my, I'll keep dropping stuff on what Dean would said to me the past year and a half, but, you know, he had like 8 ways to play a triangle. You can get 8. Well, upwards. I mean, he always used to say 8 to 20 sounds out of a single triangle. And like, that's the intent behind it, right? Your intent would be like, ding.
Yep, it's one.
Mm-hmm. So, what the what I learned about myself was is that I am worthy of the craft. So being a craftsman and artist behind that is what drives me now more than anything. Mm-hmm. Before, it was a little bit of the craft, but it was more I needed the approval of others so badly. And that had something to do with pushing myself through to the next degree, straight through. It ended up working out the way it was supposed to, because it taught me that I am worthy of the craft. I'm an artist, and I'm getting pretty good. You know, I had a lot of self-doubt, a lot, and I needed to get away from everybody. At first, it was a huge adjustment, huge.
Yeah, I mean, you're out there by yourself. I mean,
1,400 miles away from everybody.
In Louisiana, you had Blake, and, you know, you're still kind of close, but now you're playing right away, which isn't, like, incredibly hard or anything to get home, but it's still, like, man.
Well, it took that first ride home for me to realize that. So, in Lake Charles, I had 5 years of experiences with virtually the same people, and all those guys are going to hold a special place in my heart, guys and girls, because we studied together, we grew together, and the period of time allows for more connection that way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with UNLV, it was more in and out kind of thing. But I needed that. I needed to get away for a year or so and focus on my craft and just be able to tuck myself in a practice room for 4 to 6 hours, learn how to practice, be more efficient with my time. So, like, it could be the same thing in editing. I bet you're a way faster editor now than you were years ago.
Yeah.
Even a year ago, I'm way more of an efficient practicer than before, now than I was a year ago. So it's kind of like, I needed the time. The biggest thing I learned about myself was that I'm a craftsman. I'm worthy of the craft. What can I do to respect percussion the way it's respected me? So
you've touched on being worthy, you know, so this kind of leads into my next question. You've touched on being worthy. There's a difference, though, in work. And, you know, do you ever think you're good enough? Like, the work's done. The work's over. Like, it's good enough. Like, all right, I'm good enough now. Like, do you ever think, like, you need stop not stop working, but it's like I never think my work's good enough.
No, I never do.
Like, I've been
even if I nailed my master's recital, I still would have picked out all the negative parts. And I think that's what separates a lot of people. I believe there's two things that separates people from good to great. Is professionalism and attention to detail. And I've been talking about this a lot with people recently. I don't know, maybe it's just been what's been needed to be said, but I've always prided myself on my professionalism. When it's go time to work, it's go time to work. I'm not super friendly with the kids, you know, that I teach, because I don't want that.
There's got to be a line.
I think there's. I'm friendly with them. What I'm saying is, like, I don't be like, yo, dude.
No,
like,
yeah, for
I'm
sure.
Like, I there's definitely call me by my name. Let's get this work done. And I apply that to the playing settings, too. If I play a gig, I'm going to be professional about it, right? So, and then the attention to detail, I'm worried about a lot more things than probably another person's worrying about. And that's what I think is going to put me on a path that's a little bit different than another person's, is because I care a lot. I always have. Blake and I were talking today for like an hour and a half, and he was like, you know, I think the reason why the path is going down the way that it's going down right now for you is because you care a lot. And I think anybody who's in my circle, it shares the same mentality as I do. And I think that's why it's important to have a tight inner circle. You can have some people in the outer circles, that, you know, maybe not share the same mindset as you do, but they're still good, you know. That's one thing that Vegas taught me too, was that it's important to have a a good inner circle.
There's levels of...
Yeah. I don't let a lot of people in, to be honest with you.
No, for sure.
As far as percussion goes, I don't... I let in who I want to be let in. And you can stay on the outer realms, but I got my people. That's all I need right now. You know, and if I meet somebody, I know when they can be in the inner circle.
No, yeah, I'm definitely the same way of just like...
Keep talking. I'm going to turn.
Definitely just the same way of just, you know, making sure it's people with like good intent, good work ethic, good, you know, whatever it is. It's just something, like you said, I've learned over the past few years of making sure that working circle you have of is people that you can trust and that you know are going to help you instead of, you know, slow you down or hurt you in the long run or whatever. But yeah, that I've just been thinking about that a lot of like, I literally never think anything I do is good. Like I work on it and I see it and then it goes out and I'm like, I hate it. And so it's just like a thing of, I don't know, to me, it's never good enough. And then I always see something else from like a different school or somebody else put something out and I'm like, oh yeah, like I'm way behind on what I need to do. But, I'm also not a huge person of like, I need that approval from others. It's nice to be like, oh yeah, that was a really good job, or oh, you did that great, or you know, this is good, like what you've been doing is good. I like that. I've never really needed that because it's always just been like self motivation to, you know, want to do more or do better, or, you know, try and push the latest trend or whatever the case may be.
Well, I agree. It took me a while to not seek the approval of others. It was when I finally let myself have fun with what I'm doing. I lost the fun of it after my first, like, 2 years of McNeese because I was so focused on getting better and I was so hard on myself. And I think the reason why it's important to just let yourself have fun is that's when you kind of let the creative juices flow a little bit more. And see, this is why I keep the podcast. This is why I keep it to people of all facets, of all creative facets, is because, or maybe even not. So I think everything can connect in some way. So videography and music, while they are art forms, they don't really connect on a detail level. But there's a lot of similarities. So for me, being detailed in playing means I'm thinking about all possibilities that I can make this better. So I'm sure in that, I don't know if that happens necessarily in the shooting phase of what you do as much as it does in the editing phase. First of all, tell people what you do.
So, yeah, what I do. I actually didn't get started in video and editing and all that until like 2015 when I went to A&M. So for a while, I wanted to be anchor for ESPN. I wanted to be on TV. And, you know, I was a reporter for a little bit at Sam Houston, and I liked writing. I enjoyed it. I'd always been good at writing, but wanted to leave Sam Houston, wanted to be an Aggie. So went down A&M, got hooked up with 12 Man Productions, and that changed my outlook and everything completely.
12 Man Productions is owned by ESPN, right?
Not owned by ESPN, but work heavily with them because of the SEC network.
Right.
So all the schools were asked to make a, not make, but they're like, hey, we're making the SEC network. We need y'all to have the facilities to help us run this. And so A&M got a very generous donation to build a very nice facility, one of the top in the country.
From who?
I don't know specifically, but probably a bunch of donors. I don't think it was one, but they built a very nice facility. Like I said, one of the top in the country. And
I've been there. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, I got to learn from some very, very talented people. And eventually got to work there full time in 2017. So I was there for 5 years. And when I got behind the camera, that's whenever I really wanted to like make this a career. And so I was like, well, let's see how far this goes. And like you said, just kind of having fun with it and not, you know, taking things seriously when it's time to get serious, but also like having that loose mentality about it. So I do videography and editing for U of H now. I work with the men's basketball team. And football, and sometimes softball, but mostly men's basketball, football. So travel with the team sometimes. I'll do behind-the-scenes stuff, intro video, court projection, things along that nature, social media. So anything that goes on social, it's probably been touched by me or seen by me to, you know, get an approval, and I'll send it to my boss to make sure, you know, everything's good. But yeah, that's kind of the realm of what I'm in. So,
a lot of sports videography, a lot of sports related stuff. The thing about what you do is a lot of people don't give it enough credit because the sport itself is the focus. A lot of people don't really focus on the cameraman or the editing or the video board unless it has something to do with like a player running into the videographer or the cameraman, and it has something to do with, you know, like, not, people don't even think about the editing process or anything on social media. They just look at it and they're like, okay, cool. That's a cool.
Yeah. I think now, honestly, it's starting to get more of a bigger thing because LSU really took a whole like leap.
Yep.
With their stuff this past year. I mean, they invested a lot.
Shout out Ty and Chase and Spencer, LSU Drumline. They had the by far one of the best college drumline experiences this past season because of LSU winning the national championship and blowing everybody out. So,
dude, that whole department, I mean, not to diss them or anything at all, but like their stuff from looking at it over the past years to what it was this year was like, yeah. Whoa, like when did that happen? And, you know, they came out with the first few like hype videos and I was like, okay, like that's interesting. That's neat. And yep. Then it just like kept on elevating and elevating, and everybody,
they got the Rock to narrate one of them.
Yeah. Like everybody started falling in love. shoot. Either it was a, hey, I'll do it for free, or, you know, pay me a few G's to do this. But I don't know.
I think it was a little bit more than a few G's.
I don't know about price range with the voiceovers. Unless
you got money though.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, like with,
yeah, but that definitely took off and people took a notice to be like, oh man, like there's a lot of like, you know, work in this, and they do a lot of cool transitions. You know, you'll see somebody walk by and it'll carry the next frame of video or whatever the case may be. But I think that's whenever it started getting a big following. Bleacher Report picked up a few of their things, and different celebrities were like, whoa, like this is a cool video. And now I think it's starting to be noticed more, like people are starting to catch, you know, starting to catch their eye a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, and I think it kind of boils down to like maybe making the I can hear that.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. I'll edit that out too.
I love my popcorn.
Yeah, no kidding. Maybe I won't edit it out. God.
I think people just, it's very ASMR.
Ew.
Yeah, no, that's gross. Don't, yeah, you got to get that out of there.
Yeah.
Not me. I'm not editing for it's weird. For free. I don't have to edit this. Like, it's interesting.
You know, but with what you do is like, I explain to people what you do. Well, yeah, my friend Rob, he's in the video department, or, you know, he's in the production department for U of H Athletics. Rob's only been at U of H since January. So Rob just went through a change as well. And then he goes through this change, and here we are. He's in a coronavirus pandemic, and he's not even going, well, he's going into work, but
yeah, it's
not normal. So, I mean, the NCAA tournament got canceled. You had a chance to go to that.
Yeah,
know?
So it would have been my first conference tournament. Because like I said, I'd always worked at A&M. Loved my time there. Loved the teams I got to work with. Got to do some cool things. But it was like, this was going to be like the next step of like what I was doing. And getting to go to the conference tournament in March Madness would have been super interesting. And it would have been a very cool experience. But, you know, things get cut short. And not like this, like, you know, like things come to an end, like seasons come to an end, but not like this. And
yeah.
So it was just,
this was unforeseen.
Yeah. We've never been through anything like this. So it was super.
And we're going to get through it. Yeah. I firmly believe that. It's
America,
a little.
We're coming back.
It's a little. Look, we even.
Yeah, there's hand sanitizer in this
there's
room.
There's hand sanitizer right here, provided by my mother.
And the popcorn. But.
But. This screwed up so many different things, and we're selfish. Humans are selfish. We're gonna
first
think about all the stuff that's. Dude, I lost like several thousand dollars in income because the indoor season got canceled. Through, you know, it's supposed to end second week of April, always does every year in Dayton, Ohio. That's not happening. That was one of the first things to shut down for me. you know, I lost out on gigs. I had 4 gigs planned before all this. I wasn't even supposed to be home right now. I was supposed to be still preparing for my recital, and I still will prepare for it, but I'm going to turn to a video project, but it's just different. Like, I just didn't foresee, nobody saw this coming, and I kind of rolling with the punches. That's the only thing we can do, really. I mean, I think looking at it positively, I think a lot of people could use the time off and kind of just slow down a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I've been telling people, is just like less. I mean, I'm still like on social media and stuff, but less things connected to me. So like, won't be wearing my Apple Watch. I'm trying to be on my phone less. It's just, I mean, you can't get away from everything, but definitely, you know, if you work a lot, like you practice a lot or whatever, like me and you, you know, I work weekends, weeknights, late.
Same.
And yeah, it's just, it can be a very long lifestyle. Like I said, it's been a long year for me in sports. You know, you start in July, kind of whenever football starts getting picked up again. And for me, I really don't end until May, June. So you got, you know, a few breaks in between all that, but yeah, weekends, nights, it can be rough. So getting a chance to like step back, detox, you know, still make stuff, but not be so pressured to like get it done quickly. It's going to be nice, but eventually, you know, I'm going to want to get back to my routine, but who knows when that'll be.
Yeah, I mean, I liked my routine. This recital, I was way more proud of than my senior one. I was proud of both, but just my process of, I learned my senior recital. It's a little embarrassing to say now. I learned my senior recital in 5 months, and I learned my master's recital in 2. So the efficiency jump there.
Yeah,
that's going from reserve to starter, if you ask me. But that, I mean, regardless if I got the performer or not, that's still pretty big in my self-development. And it was more motivating for me because it made me relax more. It was like, okay, I'm getting pretty decent at this thing. And I'm getting recognized by people that know what they're talking about. So, I mean, I don't know what the future holds. What I would like to do in as my job is to play music and teach lessons and teach drum lines and write music, compose, arrange, and that would be my income. That's really what I want to do, you know, and that's a transition in itself. And the thing about a master's degree is if you go to school full time for that, it's still going to be a quick turnaround. You're only going to be doing that job for not even 2 years. You're going to do that job for, I think I did the math once. It was like 19 months, so not even 2 years.
How many math courses did you take in college?
Which college?
McNeese.
McNeese, I was only required to take 2 math classes.
All right, so that math was probably?
Math was not my strong suit. I can count 4s, 8s, 12s, 3s because of music. Sometimes some odd numbers, sometimes some 5s, some 7s, some 9s, 11s, 13s, 16s.
I still use my fingers a lot. To,
well, we don't, I really, mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I was done with math a long time ago.
I was,
anyways,
nothing special at math.
Back, yeah, back right to what now. You were talking about.
Sorry. Michael Royer is texting me. He's one of my good buddies. And when Mike Royer texts you, you text him back. Anyway, so I guess what I'm saying is, like, it was a transition period for me anyway. But you went through a transition period. You were at Texas A&M from 2015 on. You were at SAM for 3 semesters, right?
Yep.
You had a great time at SAM. I'm not going to speak for you, but you had a, from what I understood, we actually, Rob and I have been friends, like legit friends, probably since like 2011.
Yeah, that's fair to say.
2011, 2012.
Yeah.
When we had our group in high school, Rob came along probably like a year or two in, and Rob and I talked the most out of anybody, I think.
Yeah, a lot of our conversations lately are through PlayStation.
They are.
Shout out 2K. Anyways. Yeah,
love 2K. So at the same time, you know, transition period for me, you've gone through a transition period between Sam Houston State and Texas A&M. Then you went from Texas A&M to U of H. Now, explain why you wanted to change from Texas A&M. You got hired on from right after you graduated from Texas A&M. You got hired on to 12th Man Productions as an employee. No student.
Yeah, no more student worker role.
You were getting paid full time. Mm-hmm. You had benefits. You had a job, right?
Yeah.
So then you're like, all right, now I want to change. Explain why.
Like you said, been through several changes. Loved my time at Sam Houston, even though, you know, it may not always have seemed like that. But I learned a lot, you know, being away. Because I was there, and I mean, I'm not far from home, but I was away on my own for the first time. And it was like, I have all this free time. Like, what do I do? Like, no one's telling me, hey, do this, do that. Anyways, besides that. Being hired on full-time at A&M was probably at that time was the best thing that could have happened. You know, kept me, you know, in College Station, kept me in Texas. Had a full-time job, salary. That was great. I was like, oh, man, first paycheck. Like, this is insane. You know, I'm not making $200 a paycheck anymore. I'm making, you know, whatever I'm making now. And it was great. And I love my time at A&M. I love every coworker I had. Great people, very talented individuals. And getting to work with them every day was, man, we worked. It's really a long process when you work in athletics because it's like you see them so much. Like I said, they become your second family.
That's exactly how percussion studio works.
Yeah, so, I mean, very similar in, like you said, music and, athletics. It's, like I said, the seasons are so long and, you know, you're up there late at night, 2 a.m., 3 a.m. sometimes getting stuff done. And it was, like I said, it was really good for me. It was a good time in my life. Really enjoyed the 5 years I spent there. And this is no slight to A&M or whatever, but it was just time. I could always feel it. Like, it's time. Like, there were just little things that kept on telling me, like, you know, it's time. Whenever you're going to make the jump, make the jump. And so, it was actually a girl I worked with. She applied for the U of H job. And hold on, I'm not going to go into all details about that. I was just told, hey, I'm passing information along to U of H. See if they call you or whatever. So I get the call and it just felt right. Like the time felt right to move. I always said that if I was going to do it, I'd do 2 years at A&M and then move on. Mm-hmm. And Houston was always the first destination for me to move. And so it's very weird how everything works out. But like I said, I always wanted to come back to Houston. I've admired U of H from afar. It's me being real about things, like just something about that school has always, you know, kind of caught my eye. And so getting also to work with basketball was a huge, you know, plus for me.
You didn't get to do that at A&M, right?
No, I could have. They asked me if I wanted to. And like I said, for me, it was just time to.
Robin and I like hoops.
Yeah, so. I do like, yeah, definitely probably my favorite sport now over the NFL because the NFL's gone wayside.
The NFL is probably at bottom of the total blood. Dude, the NHL is past the NFL at this point for me. Shout out Golden Knights.
For me, it's NBA, Major League Baseball, I think, and then NFL. Yeah. Major League Baseball and NFL are tied.
I'm a little mad at my Astros, but, you know.
It happens.
That's happened since my last podcast. Astros won a World Series and cheated. So, real great.
Like I said, getting to come back home was always the first destination in my journey.
Yeah, we always talked about it too. I mean, like when you brought up that you were thinking about going to U of H, you were, I can tell because I go by my gut as well. That's, I kind of just roll with the punches. That's how I chose to go to UNLV, was it was just presented to me in a way like that. I think I may have explained this before, but it's also a thing of like, if Rob's eating away from the camera because I told him to, no. I could tell when you were, when you brought it up, I could tell you were going to do it because you felt sure about it in your voice, like in your inflection of it. And I think that's important. like, I feel like everything happens for a reason. I really firmly believe that. And I also believe in the law of attraction. I really do. If you think positively about your career or your relationship or your friends, I think good things will happen. Give a negative outlook, like I used to have. I was like, man, I'm going to be dog crap at this drum thing. I changed my mindset. And, you know, and if you have something presented to you that feels good, you're just like, all right, I think I should be doing this. I thought I was going to be living in Las Vegas at age 23. Nope. I didn't even think I was going to be living in Lake Charles at age 18. I didn't even know where Lake Charles was. It's 2 hours east. I didn't know where it was. That's how, you know, I was in this bubble. We all were in this bubble.
Yeah.
I grew up, my entire first 18 years were spent in Deer Park. It's a good home base to come back to, though.
No, for sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the mindset thing that you touched on is just making. And I've talked with people about this a lot, like over the last 6 months to a year, and that's how I kind of view. I don't ever like to look. I tell people this too. I don't like to look back. I don't like to look too far forward. I like to stay present, right in the middle, stay grounded.
I think it's important to look back only when you need to recognize something you're learning from.
Yeah, or how far you've come from a thing.
Yeah.
Or,
and it's hard to evaluate yourself, right? Like, if you're evaluating yourself, you're always like, well, I could be better at this. But you don't realize, like, for the recital or something, a big project you're working on. Like, what's the biggest project you've ever worked on?
Shoot.
That's
a good A&M. Question.
Because your projects are...
They're more... Well, when I was working snippets. On the Pulse, yeah, it was like a weekly thing of like, all right, you know, you got a day and a half to edit this segment and make it really good. Because at that time, you know, it was going straight to YouTube and then local TV. And then we got pushed to ESPNU. That was a really, really cool thing I got to do. Make TV for a national network. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, I mean, not even.
So everything, yeah, but everything for me was like, week to week or like day to day, it wasn't ever like, all right, in 6 months this needs to be done, like a recital or, you know, something along those lines.
Yeah. Those big projects, you're working on them every day, you're trying to work on them efficiently, you're trying to get better at a lot of different things at the same time, and it's hard to evaluate yourself. Like, if I had videoed myself playing the first week and then compared it to week 8 where I got left off at, of, you know, week 1 started on January 3rd. I think it was a Friday or a Saturday. And the last time I played my recital stuff was on this past Sunday. If I compared the video from then to now, then obviously I would have a representation of like, I'm doing all these specific aspects better than I was week 1, right? I know the music better. I'm actually playing the technique that requires that music, that is required of that music. I'm playing it better. But I can never, like, people can tell me all day, this is where it gets tricky. If you really care about what you do, this is where it gets tricky. If you are being told by people that you're doing a good job, you don't believe them.
Yeah. No, yeah. No, I get that a lot of like, oh, you're doing great. Oh, this is great. Oh, you know, I like really liked what you did there.
I'm like, you're lying to me.
Yeah. Like, because I'm all, like I said,
honest with me and break me down. Yeah. Like, put me into smithereens.
Because I used to have a coworker, Clay Taylor, one of my favorite coworkers of all time. He was my boss for a little bit. Actually, he was my boss. He was never a coworker. He was my boss. And he always critiqued me the hardest. And I, you know, people that I worked with as students, you know, kind of despise that about him, because he would break people down. And I was always super thankful for that, because he told me the truth of like, hey, no, this isn't good enough.
If the delivery of it is... the right way, I'm all about it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Like, and I want you to sit me down and be like, this is wrong, but this, this was good. And so then you can be even more efficient. You can tackle the things that you're not good at. And I think a lot of young musicians and a lot of people who don't get it don't do that. A lot of people who have a craft like we do, they play the stuff that they're comfortable with, or they do the stuff they're comfortable with, the techniques they're comfortable with, and they don't try to expand their horizons. And I'm not speaking like on a soapbox or anything, but I'm just saying from my experience, like, I'm night and day musicianship wise different than, and in my opinion, more improved than I was from the last time I did a podcast, especially. Last time I did a podcast, hadn't even started my master's yet. That first semester was hard, man. It was hard because I wasn't allowing myself to accept the change. And to accept the change meant, like, okay, you need to realize that you deserve to be here. I used to tell my teacher all the time, I was like, dude, I just don't feel like I deserve to be here. I don't feel worthy. He goes, dude, why do you feel that way? And I was like, I don't know. And he's like, well, stop. And I was like, well, you telling me to stop is way easier said than done. Like, way easier said than done. And if you hear any background noise, I'm sorry. I'm still in my parents' house. I don't have a studio, all right?
Makeshift.
But eventually I allowed myself to say, okay, hey, you deserve to be here. You earned this. Now get better and quit wasting time. And it's a hard pill to swallow, especially if you're your own worst critic. Because, man, like, people heard the stuff inside my head about my playing, they'd be like, oh my God, he's a serial killer. But, you know, it's that thing of, like, if people tell you a good job, just say thank you. And then take it as you will.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? It's literally a, oh, thanks, and then I move on.
Yeah.
So it's like, so I'm never stuck on, like, the current thing I'm doing. Like, I do it, I finish it, and it's like, all right, that's in the past. Time to move on to, you know, whatever I'm doing next. Or,
and one thing, too, is in a team setting where, like, a percussion studio is kind of like a team. It's like kind of like a locker room. And everybody has their strengths and weaknesses individually. And, you know, I know my weaknesses and my strengths, but I would often look at other people's strengths as attacking mine.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, wait a minute, well, what's their weaknesses? How do my strengths complement their weaknesses? How do my weaknesses complement their strengths? Or vice versa, you know, that whole mix and match thing. And I was able to get over that after a while, which I never was able to get over that in McNeese. I was always competitive, uber competitive, overly competitive in every way. And then I started to get over it at UNLV because I realized, like, okay, I have my place and my strengths. Now let's see what other people's strengths are and how my weaknesses can learn from theirs. I'm sure it's the same way in a production team, you know, in a sense of, like, this person can help me get better at this, while this person, I could help this person get better at whatever, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like I said, and whenever I was at A&M, that was all we did was, like, we'd have meetings and, you know, talk about what we were doing or what was going on in our worlds. But we hired a graphic designer. We never had a graphic designer until my last year there. His name's Drew Schlosser. Very, very talented. And, you know, we'd always just kind of done motion graphics on our own, what we thought looked cool. We're like, oh yeah, this looks good. So let's, you know, it's cool to put out. And we'd all, you know, we're all pretty good at motion graphics. Some are a lot better than others. Like, I had a coworker named Mason Flick, great with motion graphics. And so I'd always go to him to say, hey, you know, what could I do to spice this up, or how do I change this, or something along those lines. And so he helped me a lot get better. But Drew helped me with the design of, like, what I wanted to do. I couldn't really design how I wanted things to look. And so he was really, really strong at that. Like, okay, here's the pieces of what we're using. Make these pieces fit into this 5-8 second piece. And so, you know, oh, why don't you put this cut out here and then this one here. Okay, but what if you, you know, added some, you know, lines in between to represent Adidas, because we were an Adidas school, and just incorporate, you know, different things. And so, like you said, you know, just getting to learn from different people, that's the biggest thing, is be willing to learn. Mm-hmm. And, like, you're never, you know, smart enough to not learn something. I hate people that are, like, unaccepting to learn things or, like,
yeah,
take,
man,
advice.
I mean, to me, that comes with a detail thing too, though. I feel like willing to learn is being detailed in your overall perspective of your work. I've gone to school with people in their 30s. I've gone to school with people in their 20s, their teens. Like, everybody everybody was different in that aspect. Like, some people were more detailed than others. And I would offer, in the best way I could, advice to people who I know I could help. It's up to them if they want to accept it or not. So that's one thing I had to get over, too. I was like, well, I know what I'm talking about in certain aspects, but I also, I'm doing my part. They have to do theirs as well, as far as, like, the help goes. That's the thing with a craft. Like, a lot of people don't think of it as deeply as probably I do. I mean, I'd look at it as an art form. It is an art form. It's yeah. Proven. I'm a classically trained percussionist. That's a proven art form, and there's a lot of successful classical percussionists, and a lot of them have influenced me, and some of them are my mentors that I've worked with directly. Lonnie Benoit, Dean Gronemeyer, Alex Stopa, Tim Jones, like, all these people. And indirectly, like, you know, people like Steve Schick and you know, Paul Smadbeck and all these people. And I just think it's more of like a thing of honoring those who came before you, or honoring the work of somebody. You may not even know the person's name. You like the work of, like, if we go on an Astros game and you see a graphic or you see a video on social media, you don't know who made it, but you can honor them with what they're doing by either imitating it or learning from it or both. So that's where I find a lot of similarities. Like, I've brought on guitarists, I've brought on, you know, bassists, keyboard players, on this podcast, and all of them are, I just get a good vibe from people that I bring on, and it's mostly because of their attention to detail and the fact that they honor those that are before them. Like, a keyboard player is going to respect Herbie Hancock and you know, Chick Corea and all these people, and percussionists are going to respect the people, some of the people I named. While you don't have direct names most of the time, you still honor those and respect the people that came before you or are older than you and are doing work that you want to do, right?
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, doing that and then also making sure those who are, like, next in line, not saying, like, I'm leaving some great legacy, because that's not the case, but, like...
I think inadvertently you will, because of how much you care. But anyway.
Yeah, but just like when I was at A&M, I had student workers under me, like, okay, these people are going to work on softball. These people are going to work for you under whatever sport you're doing, soccer. Help them in the best way you can, you know, whatever you can teach them. Honestly, I'm not a great teacher. I'll be the first to admit it. I'm terrible at explaining things.
Mm-hmm. And not everybody's a teacher.
Yeah, I know how to do things, and I know how to do it my way. Can't always, like I said, I'm just not great at explaining, but I'd always try to and help people in the best way possible. Like you said, they're either going to take your advice or they're not, and it's going to go one ear out the other, or they're just going to take it wholeheartedly and, you know, say, okay, yeah, I can try that, or I can do that, or, you know, thanks for, I'll change, make that change. And at the end of the day, for me, that's always the best feeling, is somebody coming up to you and saying, hey, thank you for what you did, or hey, I really appreciated that advice. That's the reason why I love doing what I'm doing, because I can sort of be a teacher at the end of the day, and just kind of leave, you know, something like for the next group of, like, young creators, of saying, hey, you know, always be willing to teach, always be willing to help. You know, you're hurting others by not sharing what you know.
Yep.
Don't be selfish.
I mean, not that I'm a firm believer in karma or anything, but I really do think good things happen to those who are willing to share information, help others, and kind of, like, be like that, that sense of mentorship that is, like, not that they're, not that they're expecting anything from me, or, like, I'm expecting to be a mentor to anybody. But I think I do have something to offer at this point. I'm only 24, but I've done enough stuff to at least help those who are a little bit behind me. I'm not nobody ahead of me, obviously. So I'm just going to keep learning. I just like learning a lot, and I like practicing. You have to love the process. And I like the Philadelphia 76ers a lot because of that. They trusted the process. Yeah. And this sounds corny to say, but it's true. They did. I mean, they trusted Joel Embiid, even though he got hurt for his first 2 years. They trusted Ben Simmons.
They trusted shoot a three, but
they're an awful head coach. But, you know, they trusted their front office until he got caught with burner accounts. So, yeah.
No, yeah, but that's – I mean, I could make the coolest video in the world and everybody love it or whatever, and it get picked up by whatever account. But at the end of the day, if I haven't helped anybody, like, that's – like, so that's why I do what I do. I love helping people. And at the, if I wasn't doing video, I'd want to do something where I was helping people every day. Cause like I said, I get more satisfaction out of that than, like I said, making a cool motion graphic or a cool video. Like, that comes and goes. But like, those relationships and those moments that you have with people last forever. And so, like I said, when I get a thank you card or whatever, like, that means so much more to me than a retweet or several hundred retweets on something. Like, I don't know. I'm just different in that way.
At this point, you know, like, if I were to make a YouTube video, which I'm going to make several YouTube videos, because that's the only way I'm going to validate the real reason why I did a recital. But it's not about view counts. It's not anything about that. It's more like, you know, I want to make sure I put a good product out, and then it's going to do what it's going to do. You know, obviously I want my name to get out there, but if my name gets out there for mediocre artistry and mediocre playing and mediocre musicianship, I don't want to be out there. I want to be out there for greatness. You know, I'm starting to figure out how to take things to that next level. For a while, I hit a plateau there at UNLV. I just felt like I wasn't getting better. But it takes that little bit more of a push through the last thick of the weeds, you know?
Yeah, creative ruts are awful.
Yeah.
They're terrible.
Lack of motivation is terrible.
I've been in a lot of creative ruts, and I've, you know, told my bosses, like, hey, like, I'm not feeling it. Like, I don't know what it is. Like, I need...
And at that point, it's good to, like, step away for a little bit.
Yeah, and that's what I usually tend to do, is just, like, all right, you know, I'll edit this segment that we got to do for the show, but, you know, I got to, like, step back for a little bit, because, like, I feel like I've been doing the same thing in all my videos, or like all my whatever. And so I just need to like step back, look at some different things, or not even look at anything at all, and just, you know, get back to it in a day or two. But yeah, creative ruts are awful.
Ruts are one of the worst things that I've experienced. I've experienced a couple of them. One of them was, you know, the end of last spring to the beginning of this fall, where I was burnt out, man. I was really burnt out, and I just didn't feel like practicing. I didn't feel like getting better. I didn't feel like teaching. I just wanted to get away from it all. So I did for a little bit. I didn't pick up sticks for a while during the winter break. I got out of it towards the middle of the fall, but I still needed that break. Then I came in and tackled my recital prep, and I was going to take some... I actually wasn't going to take any time off, to be honest with you, after my recital, because I felt like I was on a really good streak there. I felt like I was being very efficient and everything. And I'm going to continue to build off of that. I mean, regardless if I performed it or not, that recital, I was proud of it. It still sucks, but I mean, at the same time, public health is way more important than my recital.
Yeah.
Barely. I mean... Anything you want to plug before we're in?
I got a few player videos coming out for some of the guys on the team.
Follow basketball?
UVH Men's Hoops. Yeah, UVH, I think Men's MBK on Twitter and Instagram. Yeah, that's where a lot of my work is going recently. I also put stuff on my personal page, but yeah, that's about it.
Cool. I mean... Rob did this because he's one of my best friends, and it's good. I want to do the podcast more. I used to do it every week, sometimes twice a week. And
now you got a lot of time.
I got a lot of time.
Quarantine, baby.
Hey, you want to come over in a hazmat suit and record a podcast?
What it do, baby? Shout out Kawhi Leonard.
Dude, yeah, I want to get this going again. Another thing that's happened since the last time I did one was the podcasting got huge. People started listening. I listened to podcasts 5 years ago with Wilson Carlisle. Shout out Wilson Carlisle. And we listened to 10-minute podcasts. We listened to Rogan back then, you know, all these podcasts. And now everybody has a podcast.
Yeah, it's huge now.
It sucks, literally. Actually, because now it's become mainstream media. It wasn't mainstream media for a long time. Now it's mainstream media, and it's going to be harder and harder to be relevant in the podcasting world. I don't know. I'm pretty niche. We'll see what happens. But I want to say a couple things before we end, too. Yeah, I want to do it more. I want to keep doing it consistently. Now that I have the time, I'm essentially done with school. I only have like 2 assignments left, my comps, and then I'm done. So everything else is canceled. I'm in Houston, so I can interview some of my Southern buddies, my kid, you know, the guys that I grew up with, family members, local musicians here. I'm going to go back to Vegas at some point whenever it's safer to go anywhere. I got tons of people to interview there. I've already got a few lined up. Everybody's left Vegas right now. I mean, the strip is empty.
Yeah, they posted a thing in the strip on St. Patrick's Day, and the strip was just dead.
Strip is dead. I want to interview my teachers. So I got to get over to Lake Charles, talk to Dr. Benoit, and then I got to go back to Vegas and interview some people over there, Dean and all my mentors. So I got a lot of plans for the podcast. I'm not looking to make money off of it. I feel like a lot of people, I've said this before too, a lot of people that I know have great stories and they're very motivating. They're craftsmen. They love what they do. They're good at what they do. So that's why I bring them on.
It's also just good to talk to people. Like, yeah, that's like a lost art form in our generation. Like, I don't know. I love sitting down and talking with people.
This is why I like doing the podcast more than listening to one, because you want to say something, you want to interject in that conversation you're listening to, and you can't because it's recorded and it's not live. And so that's why I want to keep doing it more too. And another thing is that I just want to thank all my mentors from my up until this point. A lot of crazy stuff has happened to me in the past couple months, and all good things. I now have a clearer picture of what I want out of my career. And I also, like, you know, I want to thank Innovative Percussion for believing in me. That's crazy. I mean, I'm on their educator list right now, and it's just an honor to be a part of their vision and part of their community, their family, the IP family. So yeah, man, I mean, master's is essentially done. It's strange times right now. Very, very strange times.
Yeah, man. Everybody just needs to take a step back from the ledge and relax. And,
yeah.
You know, you could
stop
say,
panicking.
You could say find their stride.
Stop. Rob says that all the time.
Hey, man. Glad you found your stride.
Hey, pal.
Hey, comma, pal. I'm also very formal in my text messages.
Yeah, it's too formal.
I'm sorry. I've been working on it, trying to get less formal. Hopefully. Some people say they don't feel like I'm their friend whenever I text
it's like
them.
You're texting your boss.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm working on it.
Yeah, he's getting better. So right around an hour, a little over an hour, so with some editing to do. I'm going to try video on this one. Rob brought his Sony A7 III from U of H, so try video on this one.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Got to get that to you.
Yeah. I'm not paying him. So.
No, I don't expect you to. I mean, this is
not one bit. Favor. Not even a little bit.
Hey, man.
Sorry.
It's a real hoss boss situation. I hate myself.
That's a good note to end on.
Yeah. yeah, that one.
Thanks for listening. If you got this far, sorry if it was a little rough audio wise.
It's making mouth noises and eating popcorn.
Dude, and I'm in a house with 4 other people, 5 other people. So it's like, a little rough right now. You know, we'll see. I'm going to try to bring some more guests in. You guys want to come on, just DM me. Seriously. Let's try to get this thing going out there. not too concerned with like being this my full-time gig or anything. I just like talking to people, and I like recording the conversation. And what else do we have to do?
Ish going on.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for listening. See you next time.